Hey, welcome to the VBAC Link. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We are truly so grateful for this community and all the support in listening to the show. Before we get started, I wanted to plug in another amazing show that you should go back and listen to if you haven't yet. It is episode 406, where co-founder of Needed, Julie, and I talk more about health, especially during our conception years. We talk more on choline and how important it is, yet how often it is being missed completely. In fact, most prenatal vitamins that you find in the store shelves contain either zero choline or barely any at all. And getting enough from food alone can be difficult. It would take at least 3 to 4 eggs a day to meet the adequate intake of choline. And new research is pointing to the fact that moms may need almost double that amount for optimal outcomes. In this episode, Julie mentions about 95% of moms are not meeting their choline needs. Choline supports babies' neural tube formation and cognitive development, and as well as mothers' healthy metabolism and mood. So getting enough is key. If you are among so many of us who are not getting enough, I highly suggest checking out Needed's Prenatal Choline. You can get 20% off your first order with code VBAC. That is VBAC at thisisneeded.com. Don't forget to go back after this episode and listen to 406 to learn even more information on choline. All right, let's dive in.
Happy Wednesday, Women of Strength. Today we are joined by our friend Nicole from Nevada, who will be sharing her 7 birth stories. Yes, you guys, 7. You guys, she has had quite the wild ride. And when it comes to birth, every story is so different and so unique and inspiring in their own ways. This episode is seriously jam-packed with things like placental abruption, NICU time, preeclampsia, a surprise HBAC, which is home birth after 2 cesareans, an induced VBAC after 2 cesareans, and changing providers, and even 2 VBAC after 3 cesarean stories. So you guys, it's seriously going to be so amazing. Nicole is a homeschool mama and a bartender on the Las Vegas Strip. She's a birth junkie and a coffee friend. She is so excited, you guys, to share these stories and hopefully inspire one of you or a lot of you out there within all of her stories. I cannot wait to dive into these stories in just a minute after our quick intro.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, Miss Nicole, I'm really excited for you to dive into a lot of stories here.
Yes, I do have a lot of stories.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You are a mama to many.
I am.
So, yeah, let's start with baby number one.
All right. So baby number one, he's actually going to be 17 on Thanksgiving this week. I know this is in the future, but my baby is going to be 17 on Thursday. So with him, he was an unexpected pregnancy. I was very surprised. I had gone to a concert with my girlfriend and another friend and had one too many Grey Goose cranberries. This sounds terrible, but my hangover never went away. I still feel guilty about it to this day. So I was on birth control and I thought, you know, well, here he is. So I called my sister and she's like, I was telling her that my breast felt like, I was like, man, they feel really heavy. She's like, dude, you're so pregnant. So I took a test. I took 5 tests and found out I had a little bun in the oven. So he was a total shock. Like, so made my first appointment, and I come from a very, like, my mom is very natural minded, and I knew that I didn't want to have a super, like, once I kind of got over the shock, I knew I didn't want to have a traditional delivery. I wasn't quite at the home birth stage, but I wanted to have a midwife. So my insurance only covered like a certified nurse midwife in a hospital setting. So I had gone to a traditional OB. Then I decided, I was like, you know what? I want to go the midwife route. So I switched over to a CNM. I really liked her a lot, and we had a good like connection. So everything was going fine. I had the traditional pregnancy symptoms and they kind of went away. It was kind of like textbook. Like I was nauseous and morning sickness, but it wasn't too bad. And then 12 weeks, all my symptoms kind of went away and I was feeling great. I wasn't gaining a ton of weight, but I felt good. You know, I was staying active. I was working. Around 26 weeks, I noticed a little bit of bleeding and I freaked out and I had an appointment actually scheduled. So it was just a little spotting and I was very concerned. And so I went in and she's like, it looks like you have a low-lying placenta. And I was like, okay. And she's like, most of the time it's going to move out of the way and you're going to be fine. You'll be cleared for a vaginal delivery. So I was like, okay, because I was already like, oh no, not a C-section. So she's like, no, I think that you're fine. You're still early. It's the first time baby. We see this a lot. And, you know, the chances of it moving are very high. So I just kind of went along. She's like, try to take it easy, but you know, you don't have to do anything too crazy. It's going to move. It's going to be okay. So around, okay, I was going to say, yeah, it was like 30 weeks. I was like 30 and a half weeks. So it's been like maybe a month or so since that time. I was laying in bed and I stood up and a gush of blood came running down my leg, like a lot. And I called the doctor or the she worked in an OB's office and I called her and she's like, I needed to come in right away. I came in and checked on the baby. Everything was fine. But they said it looks like there was a problem with my placenta, like it might be tearing. So it hadn't abrupted, but it was tearing. And so there was like a lot of blood and it was a very scary amount. So I had stopped by the time I got to the office and she immediately transferred care. And I just kind of knew that when, like, the train was on the tracks at that point. So I was like feeling that something, I just had an intuition that this was not going to turn out at all how I wanted. And they transferred care to the high-risk OB. And I went in, they gave me some steroid shots. They said, your baby looks like he has IUGR. He's small for date. Your placenta is in not in good condition and you have very low fluid. And so they wanted me on hospital bed rest. So it went from like 0 to 100, like really fast with like almost no
Oh,
time to process. So
yeah.
they sent me to the hospital and they were just had a monitor on me. At this point, after I had gone through all that, it had been a few days. So I was 31 weeks and I just was in just on hospital bed rest. I had the monitors on. And they were like, we're going to try to keep you here and keep an eye on you, make sure everything's okay, monitor the baby. You've had the steroid shots for as long as in case he's early. So my husband is like, oh, this is going to be for the long haul. He drove home. He's like, I'm going to go grab a few things. And so while he was gone, my son's heart rate crashed. I wasn't in labor, nothing. They were like, it's
No.
non-reassuring fetal heart to say, I'm calling him. They're like, we have to do a C-section right now, get her prepped or whatever. And the doctor that, like, I didn't even know these doctors. Like, they were a high-risk practice that kind of tag teamed. So it was like maybe 8 or 10 in the practice. So the one that I had met, I wasn't too thrilled with, but then that wasn't the guy that was even there. So they all of a sudden, like, I was like, you have to get here. Something's wrong. And so like he's driving back as fast as he can and then they're scrubbing me up. It all happened really fast, but sometimes it feels like a dream. Like, what's going on, you know? So my husband got there. Thank goodness he got there in time. We went into the operating theater. I got the spinal and it gave me like an instant headache. And I remember like, am I supposed to get a headache? I was like sitting up on the bed, like hugging her back. And I was like, why do I have a headache? Sometimes it's just an immediate reaction. And she's like very calming. And then they started the C-section. I remember I felt it, but it didn't hurt. It's the weirdest thing. And I thought that you couldn't move when you had a spinal, but I like slightly moved my hip, so my scar is still slightly crooked on one end. It's the weirdest thing.
Interesting.
Yes, and I just remember feeling like I was floating above. I don't know. It's really hard to just. I think it was because number one, it was my first baby. Number two, the circumstances happened so fast. Like I knew I wasn't having a healthy pregnancy at that point, but I just didn't think it was going to happen like that. So they pulled him out. He was actually fine, thank goodness. He was screaming. They weighed him. He was 2 pounds, 8 ounces, very tiny,
Very IUGR.
very tiny. Yeah. So he was about 1.5 pounds small for gestational age, but he was yelling. His lungs worked great. They with the NICU team was in there. I barely saw him. They're like stitching me up. My husband went with him. So that whole thing was like, I ended up with a cesarean section, which I knew I didn't want from the jump. And it just felt like my whole world was crashing down. Like, I can't do this. I'm broken. I definitely felt that I'm broken. Like I failed my body failed my baby. I was in a little bit of the baby blues for a while because I was going back and forth to the hospital. And I was like, look, I have to make breastfeeding work because otherwise, like, this is going to be a double whammy. So I made it my job. So like, I was like, no, this is going to work. So the next thing you know, I had like an oversupply. The nurses were like, you could feed this whole NICU with all your milk. And I was like, that was a really huge deal for me. I was doing kangaroo care and bringing in the milk. So after that, after his birth, he got home from the NICU. He was actually very healthy. He didn't need any crazy intervention. He never needed to be intubated or anything like that. He was only on room air for a little bit. He was in for 7 weeks. We brought him home and he's as healthy as could be. He was just smaller than average. And then he's taller than me now. So he's a healthy, sweet, adorable baby. And then I was like, yeah, I don't know if I want to do this again for a while because everything just kind of my expectations were like, oh, you know. So my mom actually had a VBAC. So I knew my mom had a home birth transfer, craft cesarean, where she went under general anesthesia, had a cesarean, and then she had my younger siblings and they were all VBAC. So I knew about VBAC, which is why I was like, I know I can do this, but am I going to find supportive care? And my parents live 2,000 miles away. And I was like, you know, my mom was like, you know, if you have another baby, it's always an option. And I knew that's what I wanted to do. So I ended up pregnant again when my son was a year old, and it was a shock again, but I kind of like I knew it that, you know, like we weren't like trying, but we weren't not trying. So I decided that I wanted to do a home birth. I was so traumatized by the whole hospital experience. I was like, I need to find a home birth. So I met with a few midwives, and I hadn't gone to a prenatal appointment yet. And I was like 16 or 17 weeks because I was so. I can't explain it. I know people will probably judge me for it, but I just couldn't make myself go to the doctor. I was like so, I don't know, carrying a lot of trauma from the first time. I was like, if I go to the doctor, it's gonna just, you know, I
Trigger
wasn't
you.
thinking rationally, you know, I was just like, it means everything's gonna go off. So not rational. So I met with a midwife and I was feeling good. I liked her a lot and we clicked. But something told me I should go do like a whole workup and blood work and everything first before I kind of committed to it. So I put that on the back burner and I was like, okay, I'm going to go to the doctor. So I was looking for a doctor that supported VBAC. So I found one and he actually had a big like article in our local paper that he's called the VBAC King. Like he's a super supportive doctor and he like it's his thing, you know? So I was like, okay, great. This doctor's amazing. He referred me to the high risk doctor because he's like, because of your previous pregnancy, let's, you know. Oh, I forgot one thing. After my cesarean was my first, I got a blood clot. So that's why he referred me. I got a blood clot. I was 5 days postpartum. They didn't catch it until I was 3 weeks postpartum at my incision site. So that was another reason. So then I was on blood thinners. That was a huge part of the story I forgot. So yeah, I did get a blood clot after my C-section. And that was another reason why I'm like, yes, I want to have a natural delivery because you have an increased chance of having a blood clot.
Blood clots, yeah.
So yeah, so I was like, so I had that DVT, was on the whole like Coumadin, the whole thing, like for 6 months. It was just, I was on injectable blood thinner, then wow, oral blood thinner. So that's another reason. He's like, well, okay, I want you to go to the high-risk doctor. So, you know, just get some blood work done. So I went to the doctor and I really liked her. It was a different person in the practice and she was great. And she did a whole panel and she said that she's like, let me check your levels on this and that. And she said that I had something called S-protein deficiency, which can cause people to clot more easily. And that I had a mutation called MTHFR, which can, in certain mutations, can cause pregnancy complications in some women. So she's like, it doesn't mean you're necessarily going to have it happen again, but you tend towards this. It doesn't mean it's a guarantee. So at that point, I was like, okay. So my doctor wanted to do managed, like, co-care with them and with him. So I really loved him. He was just the best. Like, he's a dad and a grandpa and just the sweetest guy. So I was going to both appointments. And I was feeling pretty good. It was a summer pregnancy and I live in the desert. I live in Las Vegas. So it was a little intense. My last baby was born in the fall. So I started noticing some swelling and I was like, okay, maybe it's from the summer heat. And they were like, you are really getting puffy. We're concerned. So they did some urinalysis and they're like, okay, we don't see any protein in your urine yet, but you're really swelling. And so they're like, just keep an eye on your blood pressure and just kind of take it easy. So I was scheduled to go into my high risk appointment and they were like, oh girl. And I think that because it was like kind of gradual, like I couldn't see it as much, but I was like, I couldn't put on my sneaker. I had no ankles. It was cankles. It was like I had no defining point on my foot. It was like a tree trunk. Aww. I was like, oh, they're like, girl, you're so swollen. It looks like it's going to start coming out of your pores. And I was like, oh no, you know? So so that appointment, they did the urine. They're like, it came back past, like way past the markers. They're like, you have preeclampsia. Your blood pressure is high. You're going to have this baby in the next few days. I was 34 weeks, so it was another premature baby. It spiraled so quickly that the high-risk doctor wanted to go ahead and do my C-section. I was like, no. I started crying. I was like, I want my doctor here. Finally got a hold of my doctor because he was on rounds. And he came and he came in and held my hand. Oh my gosh, he's the sweetest guy in the world. And he was like, look, you haven't had a previous vaginal delivery or I would induce you. But the other problem is you're too sick and the magnesium sulfate will help protect your brain. But at this point, your body can't handle labor. And he's like, I was like, I can't do it. I was crying and crying like beside myself. And he just held my hand and he said, you know what? If you want to have another baby someday after all of this is behind you, I will support you fully and you're going to have a VBAC. Even if you have had two cesareans, you're going to do it and I believe you. So I finally got myself together and the medicine was starting to take effect. So it was calming down my blood pressure. So it wasn't like a crash situation. Like he put on music. And it was more calm, but it was still serious. We didn't have time to give her the steroid shots for her lungs. She was born, she was 4 pounds, slightly small, but she needed a lot more intervention than my son did. And he was actually a lot smaller and a lot more premature because of her lung development wasn't ready yet. So after about 10 days, like her respiratory rate was really high and they did have to intubate her. I slid into the baby blues again pretty bad. Not to the point of postpartum depression, but it was pretty rough. It was rough. I just felt like a double failure. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, I did this twice. Like, this is bad. Like, I shouldn't have any more kids.
Let's talk more on choline for a moment. The RDA is 450 to 550 milligrams while pregnant and nursing. Though research suggests that upwards of 900 milligrams in pregnancy supports optimal perinatal and infant health outcomes. Most prenatal vitamins contain 1/10 or less of the RDA, as choline is a bulky nutrient and manufacturers often don't want to increase the number of capsules per serving. Choline supports the baby's brain and cognitive development during pregnancy and after birth. Choline can be found through food sources like eggs and liver, which is amazing, but more often than not, it's harder to get the full amount that we need on a daily basis. Needed has created an amazing option for when or if you need to supplement so you can do so with ease and confidence that you're getting the choline needed. Their choline add-on is dosed at 500 milligrams of choline chloride per capsule to help you reach your optimal levels. This is a form that can be used in research for optimal outcomes in mothers and their babies. Find prenatal choline and more information about choline on episode 406 and at thisisneeded.com and enjoy 20% off your first order with code VBAC.
I decided to focus on my two kids, get healthy. I knew someday down the line I wanted another kid, but I wasn't, you know, like, okay. So I, you know, actively was not trying. And got an IUD, everything. I was like, I'm not doing this. So I got in shape. I was focusing on the kids, lost a lot of weight, was working out, eating good. And when my daughter was around 3-ish, I was like, you know what? I think I'm ready to maybe try again. So I talked to my husband. He's like, okay, let's go for it. So when she was, let me say, she was almost 4 weeks, I got my IUD out. I got pregnant within 2 weeks, and then I had a miscarriage. I hadn't had one before, and it actually happened on my husband's birthday. And it was pretty devastating. I wasn't sure how to process all of it. I was just, oh, maybe I got pregnant too soon after that. And I was, you know, I was depressed and sad. And I'm like, okay, well, your iron levels are really low. And so we recommend you not try for a while. So I decided, you know, okay, whatever. You know, I started taking my supplements and all that stuff. And like the Floradix, the midwife favorite. So I was like, I'm not really going to listen. I'm just going to do what I want. So my cycle was like a little off because of the miscarriage, and I ended up like, I don't know how or what, like she's truly a miracle child because I was like, I don't know how this happened even. Like I know the birds and the bees, but I was like, this, it was crazy. Cause I don't like, I ovulated like way, way late. So I was like, I had a feeling I was pregnant. This was like 7 weeks later, I want to say. I had a feeling that I was possibly pregnant. And so I took a test because my husband's sister was in from out of town and we were planning on going out and having a few drinks. And I was like, I feel like I'm pregnant, but maybe not. It's probably way too early. So I took a test. It was negative. And I took another test just to make sure, and it was negative. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go out and have a good time. And so we went out and had a good time for dinner. A few days later, I was like, man, I just feel like something's not right. I don't know. Maybe it's because of the previous miscarriage that I'd had at the end of April and then by the 7th of July. And I was like, I don't know. I think I'm pregnant. So I took another test and it was positive and it was blazing positive. So I was like, okay, this is awesome. I called up my doctor and I was like, you know, I'm pregnant. So that, you know, let's start this whole prenatal care situation. So because of my previous loss and my high risk, they're like, why don't you come in for an ultrasound just to make sure everything's okay. A few days later, I came in and I was supposed to be by my car and everything. I was supposed to be, I think, 8 weeks. So we go in and I see her like scanning over my belly. And then she's like, do the internal ultrasound. And she's like, there's no fetal pole. There's no yolk sac, no heartbeat. There's nothing there. And I was like, She's like, 8 weeks, we should be seeing that by now. And I was like, okay. I started crying. My doctor came in and gave me a hug. And I was like, you know what? Maybe it's not meant to be this year. I'll try again next year. I was crying. He's like, if you want to wait for a natural miscarriage, you can, or we can schedule something. And I was like, but I'm just gonna wait. I trust my body. And so like a week went by and nothing happened, and I was starting to freak out. And then I'm like being Dr. Google, and I was like, oh my gosh, I have a molar pregnancy. Oh my gosh, I was just like, I still have symptoms, but there's nothing there, you know? So I went in and I was like, I feel really sick and crappy, and I think something's wrong. And so they did a repeat blood work, and I was driving home, and they called me, and they're like, your blood work levels are, your HCG is like quadrupled from what it was before or whatever. And they're like, can you turn around and come back? And I was like, I have to go to work, you know, or, so I couldn't get into the ultrasound. They're like, we want to do a repeat ultrasound. So this was a Friday. I went in on first thing on Monday morning, and it was the same ultrasound technician doing it again. She's going over my belly. She does an internal, and she's like, oh my gosh, there's a little gummy bear with a heartbeat. I was like, what? I was already prepared. You know what I mean? It was the weirdest. Like, I was so happy, but I was mentally prepared to like go through it again. And I was like, oh my gosh. So what happened was, because of the previous miscarriage and my cycle was all off and really long, I was actually, my due date was changed from March 3rd to March 21st. So when I went in, I was actually only 5 weeks pregnant, and I thought I was 8 weeks pregnant. So bizarre. I was like, I thought I knew my body better than that. Apparently not. So with her, I was like, I had mentally accepted a third cesarean if that was necessary. I was like, I just want to expand my family. My goal is to have a big family. Like, I always wanted a big family, but if I have to do this, I have to be mentally okay with it in order to have another baby. Like, I was like doing a lot of like inner work, like, okay, if you have another baby, you just have to accept it so that it could happen. And so that really helped me. I just had to know that going in, my third baby might be a third cesarean. And so I was trying to be as healthy as possible. I was staying active. I wanted to work as long as possible just so I could take my mind off of everything. So I did a lot of, like, towards the end, I did a lot of curb walking, and I was my urine was great. I was showing no protein. My placenta was in a perfect spot. I was like, okay, this is it. We're gonna do this. So what's so funny is I ended up going overdue with her, and my doctor, even though he's pro me back, gets a little antsy about going overdue, but he doesn't force anything. And so because of my history, he will induce. I consented to an induction at 41 weeks and 4 days,
Okay.
and I did a Foley, and my mom had surprised me coming out, and I was like, I had also gotten a doula because I was like, I need to have support. I paid for the doula, and we really quick, I loved her. And so my mom had also trained to be a doula, but like I said, she's so far away. And I was like, so she comes out, surprises me for my induction, and she flew out to be with me. So two doulas. So I had my doula, and then I had my husband, and I had my mom doula. So I got a Foley place. He sent me home, and it caused the first real contractions I'd ever had. It was like my first, it was like having a first baby, I feel like, because the other ones I never made at full term, and I never ever had a contraction. And I was like, oh boy, that's what you're talking about. I just remember like leaning over the kitchen counter. So it didn't induce labor enough, but it got me, when I went in for the induction the next morning, I was at a five. So it got me to a five. And yeah, I was like, whoa, okay. So then they're like, okay, we're gonna, the nurse that came in, it was like right before shift change. And she's like, I don't know. You're a VBAC? Okay. She's like looking at my chart, and she was like, you're a VBAC? Well, I don't know about this. You have some pretty narrow hips. I was like, she was like throwing shade on me right from the get-go. I was so upset. I was started crying, and thank goodness it was shift change. So I was like, I don't want this nurse anywhere near me. I'm trying to be in a positive space. So the day shift came in at 7, and I just remember her name was Renee, and she was just so, she's like, "You're gonna do this. It's gonna happen, girl. We got this." So they started the low dose Pitocin, and it was like, whoa, this is intense. By the time my mom and doula got there, I was like, I want an epidural. I was like, I was bouncing on the ball, like, I have to have an epidural. And my mom's like, Nicole, you want to have a natural delivery. And I'm not going to tell you what to do because it's your body. But I think your best chance of having a natural delivery are not to get an epidural. You don't want one. Like, okay, so I had my mom and my doula and my husband. I was like, I'm going to do this. And it was hard. It was hard. I had a lot of back labor. And I was like in every position. I kept wanting to get up to go to the bathroom, which the toilet felt great. And I was like, I'm going to do this. I was like, I didn't let them break my water. I was like, I want it to break naturally. So they have that cushion. I was like, don't do anything. I was no epidural. I was still able to get up and move around and do all this stuff. I just remember squeezing my husband's hand and like grabbing on like my mom on one side and my doula Tiffany on the other side and just squeezing the heck out of their hands and just being like, oh my gosh, I want an epidural. And my mom's like, no, she's so mean. So finally I got through it. I feel like, so they turned off the Pitocin and my mom's like, yeah, you know, she went out and she's like, yeah, you know, maybe she needs a break. So they turned it off and I kind of labored down on the bed. Still, like, I was still in labor. And that got me to a 10. And I was so excited. I was like, I made it this far. And I was like, I'm going to do this. I can't believe it. Like, it was. So then I started the pushing stage. And oh, Lord, it was not happening. I was like, I was letting those doubts creep in. I was like, I'm broken. I can't have a baby. Like I was pushing with all of my might, like trying, you know, not doing coach pushing, but like all the doula tips and all, you know, and I was like, what is going on? And so my doctor was making rounds. I had been pushing for 3 hours. I was so over it. And I was like, I can't, but I still had a little spark in me, but I was like, this needs to happen. So he came in to see what's going on, and she had a nuchal hand. Her hand was like right here. So that's what was the problem. He kind of like fiddled around or something. My husband said it looked like a Rubik's Cube. I was like, sir, get up here by the bed, by his face. So he's like, he just fiddled around. And then I pushed one time after that, and she came out. I was I was crying. I was like, you believe me? Like, I couldn't believe I did it. I felt like I was so high on adrenaline. I couldn't believe it. It was the most amazing feeling I've ever had. Like, I was like, I did this. And you have all that natural endorphins like rushing through you because I didn't have the pain medication. I was like, man, I feel high. This is so good. Like, I was like, so happy. And I just remember just holding on to her and just being like, I did it, crying. I did it. I grabbed my doctor's hand. You believed in me. Wow. It's so funny. He was just beaming and my husband was so happy. My mom, doula, she 7 pounds, 12 ounces. And she ended up being born on April Fool's Day. So I was like, that's the perfect day for her to be born, because she definitely fooled me. Like, we thought she was a miscarriage and all that. So she was like, shoot, that was the perfect day for her. So that's how that went. It was so redeeming. It made me feel like incredible. It was so healing to me after my previous birth. So yeah, that was incredible. And I was like, I'm gonna do this again. But I'm gonna wait. Of course. Like, my husband's like, but he knew I had a big family. So I was like, that, I feel like the key to me having a big family was having a VBAC that for my third child. I felt like I needed to cut it off. I didn't want to do more than like 4 cesareans. So that was so amazing. I was like, that's amazing. So she's a great baby. I ended up being pregnant again. She was like 1, had a perfect pregnancy, the same doctor. And I was like, this is going to be great. So I did end up scheduling an induction, no preeclampsia, no nothing. I was seeing the high risk just because of my history. And I also was on blood thinners the whole pregnancy, as I was with my previous daughter, because of my history with the blood clot. So I had to do injectable blood thinner every day plus baby aspirin. So that part wasn't the funnest. And it's hard to find like the midwives are okay with you doing the Lovenox, but it gets a little dicey, you know, like for transfers or anything like that. And for like, I decided not to do a home birth. I decided, since my doctor was supportive, I would stay with him. And so I had a great pregnancy. It was easy and nothing was going wrong. So I, around 38 weeks, I want to say, I agreed to schedule an induction if I went overdue, but only it had to be at least a week overdue. Like, I wasn't going to do anything like on my due date or before. So I was like, I didn't want to do it though. I was like, I want to have a natural labor. I want to go into labor on my own. I want to feel what that is like. Cause now that I've had a natural delivery, I want to do it myself. It was the day before my induction, or 2 days before my induction. I went to a kid's birthday party at a bounce house, and it was my two older kids and then my toddler. So I went into the bounce house with my toddler, my VBAC baby. And I was like, Hey, Charlotte, come bounce with mommy. And so we were just kind of jumping lightly in the bounce house. And at this point, I was a week overdue. And I was like, my induction, this was a Friday, and my induction was scheduled on a Sunday. And so I was like, you know what, I'm going to get this baby out before this induction, because I don't want to do that again. So I just thought nothing of it. And then my mom was with me. She had flown out again to be with me. And we went to like Chipotle afterwards. I was really hungry. She's like, yeah, you're going to be in labor. You're going to need this energy, you know? So I was like eating a burrito. And so we got home, put the kids in bed, and it was so weird. Like, I woke up with a contraction around 2 a.m. And I was like, oh no, this is happening. Oh man, this is, I guess. Like, I'm going into labor on my own. So funny. So it woke me up. I got up and started like doing nesting things. Like, I was kind of like, I threw in a load of laundry and I was having contractions sporadically, but I was like, oh man, I'm going to do this thing. But I was like, it doesn't hurt. It's not close together. Like, it's not to the point where like I need to go into the hospital. So everybody had woken up in the house and I was still having sporadic contractions. And I told my husband, maybe I don't need to be induced tomorrow. Like, look, I'm in like, this is early labor. I'm going to do this. And so everybody's just, you know, it's just like a lazy Saturday and everybody's kind of doing their thing. And I was having contractions on and off, and then they started to pick up, and I was leaning over the stair rail, and my oldest child, he's like, are you okay, mommy? And he was like rubbing my back, and I was like, just picking up a little bit, but I got this. And then I got this random call from like Target, and they were like, somebody is, did you make this charge? So it was so funny. I was dealing with this like fraudulent charge on my credit card, and all of a sudden my contractions stopped. That was the weirdest thing, because they'd been picking up and being more consistent, and then it stopped. And this was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So then I was like, that's weird. So I figured that all out. I got that all straightened away. And as soon as I humped the phone, I had a contraction. It was the weirdest thing. Like, my body just stopped for a minute. And I was worried, because I was like, oh no, like, I want this to happen. I don't want Tosin again. But they picked up again, but they were still really far apart and irregular. And I was like, I'm not having any consistency here. So my husband decided to take our older three children to our friend's house anyway, because I was going to get induced the next day. So they were going to have to be there anyway. So he's like, let me just take them over early. So he got their little overnight bags and took my kids. At this point, it's like 8 o'clock, and I was definitely like, they were picking up, but they were still like 8 minutes apart, and then like 2 minutes apart, and then like 15 minutes apart. I was like, this is so strange. So he's gone. And then all of a sudden, it was so funny. It's like every time my husband leaves, something happens. So my mom was with me, and she ran a bath for me. And she was like, get in the tub, this might help you. And I was like, oh boy. Woo! I was like, this is, mom. I was like, mom, I'm tired. You know what? I might get an epidural. Like, I'm always telling my mom this. She's so funny. I was like, I might get an epidural, because I've been in labor all day. So when I get to the hospital, I'm probably going to do that. And she's like, you do whatever you want. So I got in the bathtub, and they picked up like crazy. And my husband had just gotten home, and it was like, I want to say like 10:30 at night. It's 10:30. He came back upstairs and my mom was like making me say, she's like, just give into it. You're a rag doll. I was like, I'm a rag doll. My mom is so funny. She goes, just give in, just give in. It's going to like wash right over you. And so that was really helpful. And I just got in a zone. And then I was like, no, now I need to get out. We have to go to the hospital. I'm okay. This is more consistent. It's time to go. It's time to go. Everybody, let's go. So like they dragged me out of the bathtub. It was January. I put on like this like summer skirt and like a little tank top, like a nursing tank top, and I had on my husband's flip flops. They're trying to drag me down the stairs, my mom and husband, and I was like, "Get my makeup bag!" And my husband's like, "What are you talking about?" I was like, "Get my makeup bag." He says I was like the exorcist, but I digress. So he went back and grabbed it, like shaking his head. He's like, "Whatever you want." So we get down to the bottom of the stairs. Open the door. My husband had run out and put towels on in the SUV, and so he like runs out there first. He comes back to get me to take me in, and him and my mom were like taking me onto the porch, and then I was like, "Ah, my gosh, I think I have to poop," like on the porch. My mom's like, "That's a baby, okay, honey." That should get back in the house.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, oh. She's like, no, it's a baby. Get in the house. Get in the house.
Oh my word.
So she's like, oh my. As soon as I was like standing up, my water broke right in the doorway when I stepped back into the house. And then she's like, lay down real hard. Like her head is like, she didn't want her to fall on the floor. So I like laid down and she just came out. Fetal ejection
Oh.
reflex, the whole thing. And I was like, wait, did that just
Oh my gosh.
My mom caught her. My husband had been holding onto her head like in the like when we were stepping back so that she wouldn't fall out. So
Wow.
because it was so unexpected, we were just like in shock. Like,
Yeah.
so they called the ambulance because they didn't know what to, we could have been like, they could have just driven, but in the moment they're like, let's call an ambulance. So she was like laying on my chest in the doorway. The ambulance comes just to transfer us over, make sure everything was okay. We get to the hospital. My placenta still hadn't come out, but we were all in like a daze. We're like, did that just
Yeah.
happen? So we got her weighed and everything, and she was tiny. She was 5 pounds 13 ounces as a week late. Yeah, she was so tiny. So I have like the opposite problem. Everybody talks about big babies. I have very small babies, except for my third. All my babies were small. So she was just a little peanut and she was like ready to come out. She was like, oh, hello world. It was a full moon. And I don't know if that was part of it. She's going to be 9 in January and her personality so matched up with her birth. Lord help me. She's my child that gives me the most. Oh, she's so intelligent, smart, and but just so like
Fiery.
stubborn. So yeah, she is a stubborn girl, and just everything is like, we called her the boss baby from the time she was very little. She's the boss baby. So that was wild. It was incredible. It was amazing. So my doctor comes in about a few hours later, and he was out of town that day just for the day. He had gone to Utah to go skiing or something. And he came in and he goes, what happened? And I was like, I was in labor and didn't know it. That's what happened. And I'm just sitting there with my little baby. All the nurses kept coming in. What happened? We gotta hear this story. Like, it was so great. So we just stayed in like overnight and went home, and I was like, that was the most incredible experience. It was like a home birth, which I kind of always wanted, but not in that way. But I got it, but it wasn't planned. So it was so incredible. It was like, I felt like I was high for the longest time, high on life. I was like, this is so cool. I want to run a marathon. I want to do that. I was just like so in a bubble of bliss. It was amazing. And he was like just the perfect little baby. And so get pregnant again. So this time it's baby five. We've gone through, I don't know how much time we have. I know I have a million kids, but we're getting there. So baby five, my baby, my boss baby, had unintentionally flooded the house on Easter morning. put something in the toilet. All poo water on the first level, like an inch of water. We had to move out into a hotel while I was 9 weeks pregnant. Like, with my mother-in-law was living with us at the time. It was so bad. I had really bad morning sickness this time. I remember going to work. I work on the Las Vegas Strip, and so our hotel was down on the Strip. So it was actually kind of convenient for me. But I would go down the elevator every morning and be like, like the food. Yeah. They had like a breakfast, like a full breakfast. And I was like, it was like torture every morning going to work. We were living in a hotel while they're rehabbing our house. Oh my gosh, that kid. I told you, like So everything's going great. We finally moved back into our house. I decided I wanted to do a home birth. I was like, okay, well, I had a baby at home. So I had paid the deposit for the midwife, and it was actually my doula from my first VBAC. She had become a CPM. So I was like, okay, you know, so I was doing shadow care. I was seeing my high-risk OB. I was seeing my regular VBAC-friendly OB, and I was seeing the midwife. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do all three just because I'm going to cover all my bases. So I had gone to, and I decided to do this at 24 weeks pregnant. I decided to do a home birth. So then I go to her. Everything's going great until it wasn't. My sister and I were actually pregnant at the same time. She got preeclampsia at 26 weeks, had my nephew. And while I was talking to her on the phone, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I've been through it. I'm so sorry. I was just so worried about my nephew. I was freaking out because he was like 1 pound, and I couldn't be there with my sister. And I was so worried for my nephew, but he powered through, and I was pregnant at the time. We were due the same week. So she was due like December 3rd. I was due like December 10th. So this was August. Her baby was born in August. So going along, everything's good. Next thing you know, guess who has preeclampsia? Me. Again, at 31 weeks this time. So it's 3 weeks earlier than with my daughter. And so I was like, oh my gosh, what are the odds of this? So it's October. And I was like, oh my gosh, 9 weeks early. This time, it wasn't so much that I was really sick. It's that my son was just not responding. They call it non-reassuring fetal heart tone. He just wasn't, he had like a steady heart rate. It wasn't like at that age, at 31 weeks, it's supposed to be up and down and all over the place. It's supposed to be, you know, it was just like he wasn't responding to like little buzzers. And they're like, we think something's wrong. He definitely wasn't going to tolerate labor. So, of course, my doctor was out of town that day again. I was so upset.
Goodness.
But of course, he didn't know that any of this was happening. It wasn't his fault. But it was a laborist who was there, and just some guy and a student. It wasn't good, but it also wasn't like too chaotic, because like I felt like he was going to be okay. I was worried, and I was glad that I wasn't as sick as I was with my daughter. It was just my son was like not having, he wouldn't have tolerated labor. And I knew that. So I consented, had a cesarean. He was 9 weeks early. He actually spent less time than his brother, though. He's 3 pounds, 5 ounces. He did great in the NICU. He was only in for 4 weeks. Everything was fine. And I was like, okay, I'm done with kids. I was like, okay, this is it. Like, I've had 3 C-sections. I have 5 beautiful children. And then I got pregnant when he was like, I don't know. He was a little later than, they're a little further apart than my other kids. So I was like, okay, I guess we're doing this. At this time, it's 2019. We were selling the house that we'd lived in for 15 years. We had a lot going on that year. My mother-in-law had very sadly passed away of cancer, and she had been living with us. My sister was getting married and out in Ohio, and we had to drive up for the wedding. I was 9 weeks pregnant. Thankfully, I didn't have too bad of morning sickness, and I was, you know, just kind of chugging along and not telling anybody. My MO is not telling people. I just don't, because of my history, I was whatever. So everything was going fine, though. I did have progesterone suppositories at like, I think he gave them to me at like 9 weeks to like 14 weeks, because my progesterone was a little low. And I was older, so at this point I'm turning 40. And so, you know, I have all these factors. I have a geriatric pregnancy, you know, advanced maternal age, you know, 3 previous cesareans and all this stuff. So then go to my sister's wedding, come back. All of a sudden my insurance drops my doctor.
Oh,
25 weeks pregnant. And they said, okay, well, you could be grandfathered in, but I wasn't sure about it because they were being really dicey about everything. And I was like, no, I went on a search. I was like, went on the VBAC Link Facebook page. I was like, anybody know any doctors? I was like, oh, help me. Like, I love my doctor, but he got dropped by my insurance. And I think someone told me, go see Dr. Bacala. I was like, okay, go to an appointment with her. I was like, look, this is my history. It's complicated. I know. I'm not your ideal patient. And she goes, look, I trust you. I trust that you know what's best for your baby. The hospital is not going to support this, but I will support you and I'll do everything in my power to get the birth that you want. And she's like, I know that you'll do what's best for your baby. So I was like, perfect. We're a match. We got this. Everything's perfect. We sell our house. And she was due January 1st, 2020, the COVID year. And I was like, okay, we got this. We were moving in December, right before Christmas. Christmas Day, 2019, I wake up to my water breaking. And I was a week early. So I was like, oh dear, here we go again. I didn't think she was going to be early, but so bounced on the ball, no contractions, nothing. I had no indication I was in labor. And then at 3 o'clock, I did the miles circuit and took a nap. I woke up a few hours later and I was starting to have contractions, but it was like my other daughter that was born in my house, at my home. I was like inconsistent. And I was like, uh-oh, here we go again. So then my mom was like, I had nobody to watch my kids because I wanted my mom to be with me at the delivery and my husband too. So my mom had to come out again to help us move and to be with me for the birth. So I was calling everybody in my phone book. I can't believe I didn't do this before. You would think that I'm an old hat mom. No, like I just was not expecting it. I was like, I have more time. So I finally called a girlfriend from work. She came over at like 1 in the morning. By the time she got over to my house, I was like, I know it's Christmas night. I'm so sorry. She's like, girl, don't worry about it. And she was like, okay, I'm going to bring my teenage daughter. This is a good lesson for her to not get pregnant. So she comes over with her daughter. And I'm like mid contraction. And so my husband and my mom, we all go to the hospital. I had like 3 contractions on the way there. And the hospital's like 12 minutes away. And my doctor, since it was Christmas, was not on call. Like, oh, here we go. So get in the hospital. And I had 3 contractions. I was like, I couldn't sit down. They tried to put me in a wheelchair. I was like, nope, not sitting down. Not sitting down. I'm not going to sit. I'm going to walk. I'm like walking in like having multiple contractions. I was like, got on the elevator. I was like, I'm walking to labor. You're not putting me in that thing. I'm not sitting down. I could not sit down. I don't know what it was, but I was psycho about it. I refused. I was like, I can't sit down. I can't sit down. So I go up and they were like, oh, okay. Well, your doctor isn't here. And I was like, okay. And she's like, change into this gown. So I brought my own hospital gown because I was like, I'm doing my own thing. I put on my hospital gown and I had a contraction in the bathroom. And she's like, are you okay? Well, let's just check you to make sure that, you know, you're dilated. And I was like, I better be dilated. So they'd like, she was like, she's like, how many kids do you have? I was like, this is baby 6. And she's like, oh, girl, she told me. And I was like, well, I was crying. So she did like, I didn't want to do a cervical check, but I just did just because. So she did one and I was like 8 centimeters. She's like 8 centimeters. They moved me over to the delivery room really fast. Some laborist came in, wasn't my doctor. I just remember they were trying to put an IV in. They were, I was like, oh, I was like waving my hands around. I was like, I can't do this. And they're like, can you lean back for a second? And I was like, no. And like, I was like, the next thing, you know, she came out is a fetal ejection reflex again.
Oh my goodness.
They were like, so then afterwards they're doing the intake for it. They had no like history. Like I'd had my third C-section there and I had my VBAC baby there, but they didn't know who I was really. They hadn't like done the intake. So they're doing intake. Oh, have you had surgery? I was like, yeah, I've had 3 cesareans. And I'm holding my, you know, perfect 6-pound, 3-ounce baby, you know. She goes, oh, that's not permitted. And I said, permitted? I mean, are you going to put her back inside? I don't know.
Like, what was the point of even saying that?
I was like, okay, she's right here. Like, she's perfect. I'm fine. Like, everything's great. And it was just, it was so funny. It was one of those things where sometimes you see a lot of moms who are desperate to have a VBAC and they say, oh, we'll wait till you're in labor and then go in. In my case, like, I knew I had a supportive provider, but I knew the hospital supported VBAC, but only up to 2 cesareans. I don't know the third cesarean, they get all antsy. So I was just like, it worked in my case, although whatever. It's because my labor moved so fast. And I was just like, so then it's in my discharge note that patient disclosed. The wording was really like, I was like, these people.
Some weird legal thing to
yeah, some
cover
weird
their
legalese.
butts.
Yeah, it was like, patient did not disclose three previous cesarean sections, healthy, vaginal delivery, patient is ambulatory, blah, blah, all their little notes.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I was like, okay, whatever. So I only stayed in for a day, and that was great. And then, so we went through all the COVID stuff, all that. Baby was perfect. And I really, really, really thought I was done. Like, I didn't do anything permanent, but then I became unexpectedly pregnant, and I had a devastating miscarriage that ended in, it was in December 2021. So my daughter was about to turn two. It ended in a hospitalization, a blood transfusion. It was awful
Oh,
and
I'm so
traumatic. It was
sorry.
very, very, very awful. I took a month off of work. But I had this weird feeling that I couldn't end that way. I know it sounds crazy, but I was like,
No.
I can't have my childbearing years end on this note. I know it's crazy. I think people think I'm crazy, but I wasn't actively trying, but I was like, I can't have this be the last. So I got pregnant again 9 months later and or 8 months later, and I had another miscarriage that was pretty bad too. And I was like, maybe I shouldn't do this anymore, but you think, can I handle another loss? Like, it's probably my age. I don't know. So I had two early miscarriages. So then I ended up having more four miscarriages. And then I was like, this is just, I don't think it's going to happen. So I got pregnant again, and I was holding my breath the whole time. I was like, this is not going to. I was so nervous. I called my doctor right away. I got on my blood thinner right away. I was just waiting for the other shoe to drop. So I was seeing the high-risk OB. I was seeing my doctor that I had with my sixth baby. We went through the whole thing again. Like, she's like, I trust you. You had a perfect delivery last time, and I believe that everything's going to be fine. And because I know you'll consent to a cesarean if you need it. So I was did all the testing. Everything was fine. I like passed the 12-week mark. I was still holding my breath. I got to 20 weeks. I was still holding my breath. I was like, maybe this is going to be okay. So then we get to, he was due January 8th. Around Halloween of 2023, I started to get markers for preeclampsia again. Oh my gosh, no. So I was seeing the high-risk OB. I was seeing my regular OB. It's just the whole thing. And I was like, oh no, oh my gosh. So then we did some, they did the urinalysis. They're like, we're concerned about your pressures. My high-risk doctor's like, I want you to go to the hospital. I went to the hospital and I got magnesium sulfate. And I really thought my baby was going to be born that week. Or that day, and my blood pressure calmed down. They got me some IV meds, and then they kind of weaned me off of it. And my blood pressure was stable for 24 hours, and I only had trace protein, and so they discharged me from the hospital. So this was a Saturday. So Sunday, I went home, and he's like, "I want you to go in on Tuesday and follow up for the baby's movements and stuff, and for your adherence." So I laid in bed all day Sunday and Monday, just kind of chilling out, watching Christmas movies. By this time, it's November 13th. So then I go to my appointment by myself, and my blood pressure was in the 160s over 100. And my doctor's like, this baby's going to be born soon. And I don't know if it's going to be today or like this week, but you need to go to the hospital again. I was like, oh no. I go home. I was like, hey, baby, go to the hospital because he's really concerned. Get my stuff. Had my bag packed, we go to the hospital. By the time we got to the hospital, my blood pressure had spiraled so bad. It was like in the 180s, 120s. They were like desperately trying to get an IV and give me push IV meds so it hit my system faster. It was like so chaotic all over again. I was like, oh my gosh, what's going on? So this time I got really sick. So it wasn't like with my fifth baby where it was just mostly him. It was me. I was really sick. So but you don't feel sick. It's just the weirdest. Preeclampsia is the devil. So then I was like, okay, I'm trying not to look at the monitor. Everybody's rustling, the next thing you know, they were giving, I think they gave me 10 doses of the labetalol through my IV, and it finally calmed down. And at that point, they're like, when did you take your Lovenox? So this is where there's a interaction with spinals and epidurals. So they're like, if you have to have a cesarean, you have to be under general anesthesia because Lovenox interacts with spinal. That you can get paralyzed or you can die because of the way it
wow.
goes into the spinal column or something. And I was like, what? Like, I knew all this, but I was like, I didn't think it was going to happen. And they're like, if we can't get your pressures down, you're going to be put under general anesthesia. And so that was like, this is not helping my blood pressure. Like, so then it finally calmed down. They got me on mag sulfate. The labetalol finally started to work. And my doctor was an absolute champ. I can't tell you, I don't know any doctor who would have done this. Like, it's hard to find a doctor like this. So she was not on call, but she has a whole team. She owns her own practice. She made sure that my wishes were met as long as I was okay and the baby was okay. So she was like writing reports and stuff to send to her associate OBs. So they're like, okay, the baby's doing fine on the monitor and she's stable. And so she said, we're going to let her induce for at 32 weeks. And I was already 1 centimeter. And I was like, oh my gosh, this isn't going to work, but I want to do this. I can do this. And so the hospital was fighting her and they were going to send up an advocate to tell me to, I was putting myself at risk and my baby at risk. I decided to agree to every intervention because I did not want to recover from a cesarean at the holidays. And I was like, if my baby is healthy and I am healthy, I want a vaginal delivery and I want to try. Somebody talked them out of coming up to see me. I don't know who it was, but she got me an induction, which is against their policy, but she did it. They ordered the Pitocin. I was already 1 centimeter. They decided not to mess with the Foley. I didn't feel anything for the longest time. And I was like, oh crap. The next thing you know, they're like, we want to give you an epidural because of your blood pressure. It's going to help the pain levels that lower it. And I was like, I have not had an epidural for any of my vaginal deliveries, but I don't care. I want to do whatever it takes. So they got the nurse brings in the peanut ball. It was just kind of one thing after another. And then they're breaking my water. And I consented to the water break because she wanted it to move along. And I was like, you know what? I have nothing to lose. I've accepted the fact that I might have to have a cesarean, but I'm out of the danger zone for spinal. So I don't have to have general anesthesia anymore. So I'd been on Pitocin from like midnight. At this time, they broke my water. It was probably, I want to say 10 o'clock. So the next thing you know, I thought for sure like nothing was happening. And then all of a sudden it felt like my epidural had failed on one side. And I was like, babe, it's like ripping. I feel this ripping feeling in my leg. It's weird. I don't know what it is. Call the nurse in here. And it was like on my lower right thigh, like upper thigh, it just felt like it was burning. What is this? Oh my gosh, it's burning. It was like my thigh though. It wasn't like my stomach or my back. It felt like it was like on my upper leg. It was so weird. I was like, it's burning. It's burning. So the nurse, he's like, then I started like making like, that's just like, when he goes out into the nurse's station, my poor husband, he's been through it. Like I said, he's like, when she makes a sound, she's going to have a baby.
He knew.
So he knew. So the nurse comes running in. She goes, oh my gosh, what the heck? The nurse caught the baby. While the laborist was walking in, or the OB was walking in, the associate OB. She walked in behind her. The nurse caught the baby. He was screaming young. He was small. Again, me and my small babies. He was 3 pounds, 12 ounces, but he was very healthy. And I did it. I cannot believe I had a premature induced VBAC.
VBAC after three cesareans.
And I did get the intrauterine pressure catheter too. I forgot to mention, I did have that. I consented to every intervention possible with that VBAC because I was like, I have nothing to lose. And I knew that I was going to have, if I didn't maybe consent, that I could end up with a cesarean. So I was like, whatever it takes to move it along, whatever makes you feel better to leave me alone, I'm going to do it. So I did it. So I had the IUPC and I had the epidural. And I was monitored the whole time. The peanut ball did wonders. The nurse was amazing. She goes, you can say no to whatever you want. They can't tell you to do anything. If you don't want a cesarean, you don't have to have one, girl. And I was like, as long as my baby's okay, that's what I'm going to do. And she was the one that ended up catching him. So it was perfect. He turned one last week. And he's just the sweetest little caboose in our crazy family, and couldn't ask or be more blessed. Like, he's just a sweet little cherry on top. So he's my little quadruple rainbow baby who was born in crazy fashion. Like, I still cannot believe that that happened. I'm so thankful and grateful that I wasn't recovering from a fourth cesarean around the holidays and going back and forth to the NICU. So that's my insane obstetrical history.
I mean, there's a lot. You have
there's
a lot
there. I have a lot there. There's a lot to take in, but I feel like I've done like everything, like cesarean, preemie, preeclampsia, like all of it. Like I've done a full term normal healthy delivery with an induction. I've done one without an induction. Like, it was all
placental issues, accidental home birth, unmedicated, medicated, induced, premature VBAC after premature cesarean, NICU babies. Preeclampsia, all of the things.
Wow, it was crazy. Yeah, so I've definitely like been through the gamut, and the kids are 17 on Thursday too. One, and my bookend babies, the boys. It's so funny because all my boys were born in the fall and all were 2 months early. My three boys, and I have four girls. So yeah, it's just crazy. Just been through it.
You have been through it. But wow, I mean, seriously, thank you for sharing all of those stories with a twist. Yeah. Every single one had a twist.
Yes.
Or something, you know, that was unique about it. And, you know, it just goes to show how really birth is so unpredictable.
100%.
No matter if it's the same human giving birth, right? You're the same person. You are the same person giving birth, but every pregnancy, every birth, every baby, every labor, every postpartum, it's all different. And it really is the case with every birth. So I want to just drop that as a reminder to the listeners that, you know, just because one birth went one way doesn't mean that it's going to go the same way the next time. And in addition to that, there may be similarities, but that still makes it different. And, you know, you had mentioned earlier on, like, with your third, like getting kind of getting in your head, like we create this idea in our head that we failed or that we can't do something, or, you know, that there maybe there was something that we did that caused something. But listeners, I encourage you to try and drop it. And I know that it's not easy. I know.
Yeah.
I've been there personally, right? I was in my, I'm sure you've heard my stories, you guys. I was in my driveway with my arms flailing up and down, throwing a little tantrum because I was so upset. But it really, try to offer yourself grace. You guys are doing an amazing thing by bringing a human life into this world. It's absolutely incredible. And so offer yourselves grace. Get the education, do everything you can, find the supportive provider. As she mentioned, we do have a supportive provider list, so check it out. Hopefully there's a provider in your area, or if you guys have recently had a VBAC and you're like, oh my gosh, my provider has to be on that list, please email us at info@thevbaclink.com, because we know also how hard it can be to find support.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you again.
You're welcome.
You are I know just it was amazing.
It's a lot. I have a lot of children, so it's a lot to tell. But it was, you know, my experiences, I feel like there's almost one for everybody or every situation, because I do have seven children and I did have multiple different scenarios happen to me as the same woman. I had so many different experiences. So I feel like if I can have a VBAC after three cesareans at 32 weeks being induced, I feel like, you know, you can do it. You can do it for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Follow your heart. Know that you can do it. Don't doubt yourself. Like I said, I know easier said than done. But let me tell you right now, Nicole and I, we believe in you. We believe in you.
I believe in you, Mama. You can do it.
Yes. All right, women of strength, we are going to say goodbye to our friend Nicole. But Nicole, thank you again.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.